is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Today, the Cambodian commandant Kangek Yu, also known as Comrade Doik, was convicted of war crimes and crimes against humanity and sentenced to 35 years in prison. It was the first major conviction for a special UN-backed tribunal that was set up to prosecute crimes committed during the Khmer Rouge, which claimed the lives of 1.7 million people in Cambodia over 30 years ago. 30 years ago. When it comes to prosecuting genocide and human rights violations, the timeline can be staggering and sometimes very frustrating. In 2006, Slobodan Milosevic died in a jail cell before a special tribunal for the former Yugoslavian leader had finished trying him for genocide and crimes against humanity. His trial was that long. In 2002, the International Criminal Court was therefore created to investigate and prosecute crimes like those alleged against Doik and Milosevic. And since its creation, it has opened investigations in Uganda, Sudan, and the Democratic Republic of the Congo. Recently, Massachusetts attorney Alex Whiting was appointed as deputy chief of investigations for the International Criminal Court. He'll be working there beginning in December, and he is a professor currently at the Harvard Law School and former assistant U.S. attorney for Massachusetts. He joins us here at Radio Boston now. Alex Whiting, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Meghna.
So you've been working in this area of criminal law for some time. You actually did serve as a prosecutor at the International Criminal Tribunal regarding the former Yugoslavia.
That's right.
And you were an attorney, if I understand correctly, in the Civil Rights Division for the Department of Justice. So you have got a lot of experience here. Can you tell us about the nature of cases that you may be investigating that come before the ICC?
So the cases that come before the ICC are presently all in Africa, and they all involve mass atrocity. And what I can say from my experience at the ICTY, the Yugoslavia Tribunal, is that these cases are enormously challenging to investigate. It's difficult to have access to the crime scenes. It's difficult to persuade witnesses to testify. In the case of the Sudan, for example, the ICC has not even had access to the Sudan and has had to investigate from outside the Sudan. So they're very, very difficult cases to investigate, very challenging.
What is it that determines whether or not the home country in which the alleged crimes are committed, whether or not the home country does the investigation and the prosecution or the ICC?
Right. That's an excellent question. The ICC is set up, the model is set up to give preference, first cut, to the domestic jurisdiction. So there are I should first say that the ICC is set up by treaty, and there are 111 countries that are members of the ICC.
And not including the United States.
That does not include the United States or a number of other important countries like Russia and so forth. But the way it is set up is that the domestic country has the obligation first to investigate and prosecute war crimes, crimes against humanity, genocide. And it is only if the domestic country fails to do that, fails to investigate and prosecute, that the ICC has jurisdiction. And they come in only if there's a failure of domestic action and only as a backup.
Okay. So, therefore, the thing that I've always been curious about is almost kind of the nuts and bolts of what it takes to enact an investigation through the ICC, because obviously it must be quite different, or I'm asking you, is it quite different than the U.S. judicial system, and how do you go about actually gathering evidence, especially in some of these places where war crimes or crimes against humanity are actually still ongoing?
Right, right. You know, as you mentioned, I was a federal prosecutor before I went to the ICTY. I worked in Washington and in Boston. And as a federal prosecutor, you had all kinds of tools available to you to investigate and prosecute. You had access to the crime scene. You had witnesses available. You had the tools to compel witnesses to come. You had all sorts of other sources of evidence, video, credit card records, all kinds of documents and so forth. As an international war crimes prosecutor, you often have none of those tools, and you do not have a police force. You have investigators, and you rely largely on the cooperation of individuals and countries to provide evidence. So the court does send investigators to the regions, and they're security issues involved both for the investigators and for the witnesses, of course, primarily for the witnesses in doing these investigations. And they interview witnesses, they gather evidence, they try to get other countries to turn over evidence and to cooperate. But it's a very it requires a lot of ingenuity and a lot of perseverance.
Well, this is what I wonder about, because you can request cooperation from the country, but the ICC cannot require it. Is that correct?
Well, let's say it's a request that has legal effect, right? Because these investigations are occurring in countries that have joined the ICC, have signed the treaty, and so under the treaty, they have a legal obligation to cooperate, and many countries do cooperate.
Well, let me ask you a little bit more about that, because, for example, in Sudan, I believe a warrant was just issued, actually a new warrant, for the arrest of Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir after the International Criminal Court added genocide to its list of charges against him for what had happened in Darfur, of course. Bashir just made a trip to Chad, which is a member or a signing member of the ICC, but Chad did not arrest him. So what does the court do in cases like that?
Well, that is correct. And I should say that in the case of Sudan, of course, is not a party to the treaty. The ICC got the case in Sudan by a referral from the United Nations Security Council. But you're right. Bashir traveled to Chad, and Chad should have arrested him and surrendered him to the court. These are the frustrations that the investigators and prosecutors have to deal with at the International Criminal Court. The cooperation is uneven and is often politically motivated. There'll be cooperation when it's expedient and less cooperation when it's not.
Mm. Well, uneven, or maybe not as expedient as we'd like. I mean, that is one of the issues I think that most people kind of that they think about when they think about the ICC, that it does seem to take an awfully long time for prosecutions to move forward at that level. But I believe that you say when it comes to issues like genocide and war crimes, time doesn't really matter as long as justice is eventually served.
Well, it's not that time doesn't matter, because I do think that time is important with respect to these cases, and it's important to try to be expedient for the victims, to preserve the evidence, to have deterrent value. But what I have written about is that there is a countervailing pressure with respect to these cases, that because of the circumstances under which they take place, which is societal breakdown in many cases, often time is required to get to the truth. And so it takes time to get access to the evidence. It takes time for the polarization of the society to settle down so witnesses feel like they can have some perspective on what happened and that they can feel safe enough to come to The Hague to testify. And so I don't mean to justify all the time it's taken. You mentioned the Doit case, 30 years. Nobody can justify 30 years. That's just too long. But our experience at the Yugoslavia Tribunal is that the court was set up in 1993, but it wasn't until 2001 that the court really began to get access to documents and witnesses and evidence, and defendants were surrendered. And so it took a period of about 7 or 8 years for the court really to start to be able to get to the truth of what happened. And that is just a feature of these of trying to investigate and prosecute where there has been mass atrocity and societal breakdown.
Mm-hmm. You know, you mentioned the Yugoslavia Tribunal, and one of the things I remember from that is, and do correct me if I'm wrong, but that Slobodan Milosevic opted to defend himself, and part of his behavior during his defense made a lot of people question basically the relevance of the ICC, that this fellow could, make a mockery of the court, essentially. That trial, of course, never really came to a full completion because he passed away before the end of it. But so my bigger question then regarding that is that, does it make you wonder, or what's your response to people who say, what's the point of the court anyway, A, if something like that can happen regarding Milosevic, and B, if major nations like the United States don't even sign on to it?
You're right that the Milosevic case was very much criticized, and there was a lot of disappointing aspects to it, particularly that he died after 4 years before there was a verdict. But what I will say is that we have to keep in mind that this is really a relatively new process, a new experiment. There was Nuremberg, and then there were no international war crimes prosecutions until 1993 when the Yugoslavia Tribunal was set up. So we've really been at this for about 17 years, and we're still learning. And a lot was learned. There were a lot of mistakes made in the Milosevic case, a lot of mistakes made in a number of these cases, and we're learning from that. And I think that the courts are getting better. They're getting more efficient. They're figuring out how to do these cases. And your question about what is the larger point? The larger point, the impact will never be from the individual cases, but from the larger message that is sent when somebody like Doik is convicted, somebody like Milosevic is prosecuted. That sends an important message to victims, and there's evidence that nations are and rebel groups are beginning to conform and starting to follow the rules.
Well, that's Alex Whiting. He is a professor at the Harvard Law School and former assistant United States attorney for Massachusetts. This December, he will begin overseeing investigations at the International Criminal Court in The Hague. Alex Whiting, thank you so much for being with us.
Magna, thank you. It was a pleasure.
Radio Boston is a production of WBUR with regular contributions from The Angle at boston.com. I'm Magna Chakrabarty. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.